Welcome to the second season of Operational Harmony, balancing business and mental well-being, where we achieve goals without sacrificing peace. Our host, Nikki, is the owner and founder of Nikki's Office, where she specializes in social media management, business audits, and business coaching. Her journey through mental health and entrepreneurship not only brings awareness, but also equips her with valuable coping skills. This unique experience offers a fresh perspective on approaching challenges and innovating in different ways. Let's introduce our guest.
Hi, my name is Allison Steinke. I am a holistic nutritionist and a health coach, and I am a mother of 11 children who I recently have to start over because I was in an abusive marriage. And I am restarting my career as a coach. I did my training years ago, but I'm niching down, getting really serious about this. And I have a story to tell. And I am very excited to share my story with you and to help as many women as possible who are in the position of having to restart, step back and take a look at their life, who are ready to move forward with their health and mindset and whatever that life looks for you as an individual.
So how, after leaving the situation you were in, how did you get started again with coaching? What made you decide that was what you were going to go with?
I'll start a little bit back here. A friend of mine who is a physician, she asked if I would work for her as a health coach. She was going to start a holistic fertility clinic, and that excited me, and it was right up my alley. So I got my certifications, and then she never started the clinic. She might in the future, but it's not in the works right now. But I just had my 11th child when I was certified. My husband was making money, paying the bills, wasn't really something I had a lot of time to focus on. And I never planned on marketing myself and starting a business from scratch. So I just had a few clients, but it kind of just sat on the side for the most part. And then the other piece too was I was overweight because I had turned to food to deal with the trauma. And I was embarrassed to tell people that I was a health coach because I was overweight and felt like a hypocrite. And then fast forward, I ended up having to leave my husband. And the first thing I thought I would do, because I didn't feel like it was in a place to be coaching others, and I wanted to work early in the morning, I thought I would want to be a copywriter because I enjoy psychology. I enjoy writing. I feel like I'm not bad at persuasive writing. So I poured myself into copywriting, put many, many hours into that, but I only wanted to write for coaches. And I realized that was a fairly saturated industry. And the idea of writing for somebody to sell razors or soap or something, I couldn't do it because I wanted to make a difference. I wanted to help people and I was passionate about coaching. Funny thing is, I ended up with a client by accident, a coaching client. I was trying to do some writing for her and she's like, no, I want you to health coach for me. So I got back into it because of her and I'm like, oh yeah, this is what I was made for. This is what I love doing. This is my purpose. Why in the world am I writing? And I completely switched gears and got back into health coaching and I have not looked back. I am loving it. It aligns with who I am. It aligns with my gifts. It's what I want to do.
So what was your biggest hurdle to get over when you were starting to coach again?
I would say mindset and finding my methods of marketing that aligned with my energy and also the people that I should be serving. And that was something that took a little bit of time and a little bit of refining and a little bit of back and forth to try and fit into that groove and figure out my story, my gifts, what I can bring to the world. And yeah, it was just a process of time and a feedback and of realizing who my ideal client was and where they were and if they were even looking for coaching services. So I'm continuing to clean up my message, if you could say that, to try and reach my ideal client.
How have your views on mindset changed?
My dad used to call me the frustrated entrepreneur because as long as I can remember, from a young age, I was coming up with business ideas. And then as soon as I found a reason why I didn't think they would work, I just said, oh, it's not going to work. And then I scrapped the whole thing instead of figuring out a way through. So there were some pivotal moments and some big changes after my husband and I separated. One of them, I told myself, failure is not an option anymore. That's not an option. I have to do this. I have to succeed. And so when I came up against a challenge, I just plowed through. I just figured out a way through it, figured out a way around it, put the time in, asked for help, figured out a plan. ChatGPT has been great because I'm not very good with technology. So say step by step, tell me how to do this with this platform, with this website, whatever. And that's been a big help to me. But just I've hired a little bit of help here and there, but hardly anything because I don't really have much of a budget for that. I always had limiting beliefs too, like I can't do this because, or I'm not good at this, or people wouldn't want to hear what I have to say, or I'm not perfect, therefore I can't proceed with X, Y, and Z. And so I've had to really reframe my thoughts. Instead of saying I'm not perfect at this, therefore I shouldn't do it, I tell myself nobody was perfect at it. It doesn't mean I don't have something valuable to offer. And just reminding myself of when I have been of value to people, when I've been able to help them, when I'm coaching and I see just the tears or the light come on, I go back to those moments in my mind and say, no, I have something to offer. And this is my path. And so every time I come up against some kind of limiting belief, I'm like, no, I cannot entertain these thoughts. I got to find a way through it. I have to change the way I think. I have to change the way I word these things. I practice gratitude, enjoy the journey. That was another thing. I always thought, oh, the mountaintop is so high and the goal is the mountain. It's the top of the mountain. No, the goal was never the mountain, the top of the mountain. The goal is the journey, is on the way up. It's enjoying the climb. It's taking those steps, the fresh air, feeling good about it, making the changes. I still have some weight to lose. I've lost a lot of weight, but I have to just shut down that negative voice that says people won't want to hear me speak if they see me being overweight. No, I have a story and I'm proud of my story and I'm proud of how far I've come. And it's okay that I'm overweight because I am doing all the things. I am eating well and I am exercising and I'm doing all the things that gets you to the point of being thin, even though I'm not quite there. It's maybe more relatable that way too. I don't know.
I think it is. Hearing somebody, I mean, look, I'm not thin myself, as you can obviously tell. But for me, seeing an influencer who weighs 10 pounds talking about how they struggle every day to exercise is like, oh yeah, right, whatever. I don't care. You're annoying me. But seeing somebody who is overweight trying and succeeding at losing weight, that for me is a higher motivator. Because the 20-something year old who's never had to go through anything, who doesn't have any kids and doesn't understand that your body changes after having even one kid, and saying, oh, see, I can do nothing, or I can pretend to lift weights and I'm still this skinny thing, is really frustrating. Because you're like, you know what? I could never do that. I've always been the more thicker thighs and stuff, even when I weighed semi in range. So them influencer people just annoy me. And so for me anyway, it would take somebody who's been through trying and failing and trying again to lose weight and then succeeding, even in an ongoing process. It would mean more to me than that.
I try and be real within reason when I post on Instagram and Facebook. There's one post where I had gotten some horrible news and I was devastated. And I like, what do I do with all this pain and anxiety and frustration and emotions? So I went for a run and I took a picture of myself and I looked heartbroken, but I felt so much better. And so I posted that and that got a lot of views. Because I was just being real. And I posted another one yesterday. Like, should I even post this? I look so tired. you know what? I'm tired some days and that's okay. So I just posted anyway, because I wanted people to have the content and have the information that I was sharing with them.
I think a lot of people are done with seeing the perfect person. However, that ends up looking like the perfect mom whose house is super clean all the time, because that's a lie. Unless you're that strict, and dude, someone needs to check on your kids, right? Or the person who cooks this huge, huge dinner and says, look, I did it all in one pan, no cleanup, everything's clean. Yeah, no, that's because for the 15 steps before it got in that baking pan, like, you washed behind yourself, you washed the dishes. It's called clean as you go. Anybody who's ever worked in a kitchen will tell you that's exactly how you're supposed to do it. But they use it as a, haha, if you can't do this in one pan, then you're a failure. And I think a lot of people have keyed in on that and are looking for the more authentic posts where, like with you running, you look heartbroken, but you're still doing, right? You're not sitting on the couch with a bag of Cheetos. Although nobody would fault you if you did, when extremely bad news happens, you stumble a little bit. That makes you human, right? There's a lot of not human people on social media nowadays, and their perfect life. Look, if you actually think somebody's life is perfect, then you obviously don't know them at all. Nobody's perfect. Ever, in any situation. Some people handle difficulties differently and they come out the other end having grown stronger without having relied on anybody. Those are rare. Me, everybody's gonna know if I'm going through something hard, because I am mouthy as heck. I'll be like, why do I have to do this? I don't even want to do this. Why do I have to do this? And my friend will be like, because you have to. Fine, I'm doing it. With much complaining, I'm doing it.
Yeah, we all have our own process, our own way of getting there and doing that thing, whatever that thing is. And that thing can be different for different people. I think we see these perfect models on Instagram, like, oh, she's a health coach or whatever she does, and she does this and that, the other thing. That means I have to do the same thing to achieve the same results. But I think we so often forget the fact that we are unique individuals. And I'm very passionate about this. Like, everyone is created differently and we all have different gifts. And I will fail if I try and be like you, and you will fail if you try and be like me. And I tried exercising regularly at this time that I thought just made sense in my day. And I realized it made sense as far as scheduling went, but it did not make sense as far as my energy flow went. So all I had to do was change up the time of day. And I love to exercise now. It is my therapy. It was actually, I went to the gym last night and worked really hard as a treat to myself. And it's not just because I should be doing these things. I found what I love about it. And that's going to look different for everybody. You know, not everyone's going to love lifting weights. But that's okay, because there's other ways to be healthy. Lifting weights is good, but there's other resistance training. There's other things that you can find. And I like to help my clients find that, their individual gifting, and find what works for them, because that will be sustainable. Anyone can stay on a schedule and say, eat this, do this exercise, whatever, for 4 weeks. But then as soon as they're done with the accountability, they'll just slowly drop off, and that will be the end of it. But finding what works for each individual is the key.
So how is your mental health doing after all of that?
Pretty good. After all that, as in bad marriage?
Not today. I have a bad background myself, and so I do know, not any kind of specifics of yours, but I do know coming out of a bad situation can be very hard on the mental health.
For me, I often think in pictures, and this is the picture that I have when I was with my husband. I have this picture of like being in a road, and there's this manhole, and I'm trying to get on the manhole, and he's shoving the cover on me, and I try and reach my hands out, and he shoves it on my hand. All I wanted was air and light and to live and breathe. So now the manhole cover's gone. I get to show up how I want. I get to be who I want. I get to do what I think is best. And there was a period of grief, like the most intense grief I've ever known. Not because I lost him necessarily, but because I lost this idea of a perfect family. My children basically no longer had a father. They still have a father. He's just not around much. He's not really part of the family. I lost a lot of things that I had to grieve. And I got sick and tired of crying. There were so many tears. But you know what? I had not cried for so long that I couldn't cry. I had to retrain myself to cry. And after the grief, I am happier than I've ever been in my life. I am so happy. And there are hard days. Absolutely. There are struggles. Absolutely. But I'm happy to be alive. I enjoy my life. I enjoy my kids. I enjoy what I do. And when I do come up against a problem, I ask myself, okay, what's going on? Am I depressed? Am I grieving? Usually I forget to ask myself if it's hormonal. Sometimes I'm like, oh, that's what was wrong. And then figure out what the best thing to do and how to get through that. It might be, do I need to call a friend? Do I need to go work out? Do I need to journal? Do I need to sit on the couch with a bag of Doritos? You know? And I think just being aware and figuring out what you need, and that changes from day to day, from month to month. And then finding out what you need and fighting for it. It was the beginning of all my healing. I felt like, and this was a few years probably before I left my husband, I felt like God couldn't love me because I was not perfect. And even my husband couldn't love me because I wasn't perfect. So how could a perfect God love me? And I told my counselor this, and she had me read Psalm 139. And it's all about how God knows us intimately and how he created us. And he knows every little detail of our lives. And only someone who loves you immensely cares about that many details of your life. And it finally stuck. And I knew intellectually that God loved me, but in my heart, I couldn't believe it. I finally accepted it. And that was the foundation of my healing, because if God loved me, I had worth. If God loved me, I should be treated with respect and dignity. I should have boundaries for myself. I should not put up with the treatment I had been putting up with. And I deserved to be treated with respect and with love. And without that understanding, and it's so hard when you're in an abusive relationship too, right? Like your abuser just chips away at your self-worth and makes you feel like nothing. And so without understanding your own worth, it's pretty hard to move on and to move past and to take the necessary steps that you need to take and to know that you deserve to take those steps for your well-being. Actually, in my case, I mean, for your kids' well-being too, right? I won't go into all of that, but that was, I would say, the foundation of all my healing. And then understanding, like I told you, I went through that period of grief afterwards, but then it kind of just hit me one day, like, I cannot give my kids a whole family, whole traditional family with a father and mother. But my family was never really whole anyway. It was always broken, even though we were all there. All the members of the family were there. But what I could do is I could give them one healthy parent. And that was another really pivotal moment, because I said, okay, I have to be healthy for my kids, because I can do that. That's in my control. So I asked myself a lot of questions. Everyone should do this. What do I need to do to be healthy? First thing came to mind was sleep. I'm a much nicer person when I sleep. So I make sure, sometimes, I mean, life happens. We don't always get 8 hours of sleep, but that's a priority for me. That's really, really important to make sure that I get 8 hours of sleep. I have a schedule I like to stick to. If I go to bed late, I will wake up a little bit later to get my sleep in. And then, of course, nutrition. And that's when I curbed the nighttime snacking, because I relied on food in order to calm down enough that I could sleep. It was a stress reliever. It was a numbing drug. So I started working out. That's when I started working out in the evenings too, and I found I slept a lot better. And then it also regulates your hunger. I had something heavy in protein if I was hungry so that I wouldn't have the urge to snack. And I changed my schedule so that I wouldn't be up late by myself reaching for the snacks. And they weren't necessarily unhealthy. It's just you can eat a lot of the right thing and it can be wrong because of the volume. Anyway, and then yeah, so exercise, nutrition, mindset. I'm still working on my me time. People ask about me time, but honestly, my favorite me time is working out. Like, I will dance under the stars by myself. One time I was dancing out under the stars, and the northern lights crept out, and we were dancing together. And it's an incredibly healing thing to do. So, listening to my loud emotional music and working out is like, that's my me time. That's what makes me feel rejuvenated. Anyway, I went on and on about that. But yeah, those were two pretty big keys in my own healing and recognizing my uniqueness and working with my uniqueness. And I think I'm neurodivergent, and that makes it makes us, we have a harder time just doing the things on our list. It is very, very difficult for us. And so, like with the copywriting, what I felt like I physically couldn't write unless it meant something, I really couldn't. And so I had to work with my energy instead of against it. And so that's really actually been a benefit to me, I guess, in a lot of ways, because that's become very important to me. And that's something I feel like I can help other people achieve as well, instead of just checking off the boxes on a list.
Hey everyone, thanks for sticking with us. Before we dive into our next topic, I just want to take a quick moment to remind you to like this video, subscribe to our channel, and hit that notification bell. That way, you'll always be the first to know when a new episode drops. And we want to hear from you. What topics are you most excited about? Drop your thoughts in the comments below. Your feedback helps us create content that you love. We've got some exciting stuff coming your way, so don't miss out. Now, let's switch gears and jump into our next discussion.
Going to do t energy management versus time management in
Okay.
business. So, time management, you focus on the schedule and prioritizing tasks within the hours that you are going to work. Energy management, you prioritize tasks based on your energy levels. So, if you wake up first thing and you're like me and want to kill everybody who talks to you, maybe first thing in the morning isn't the time for you to be doing certain things. But if you wake up in the morning and you can get yourself going, maybe that is the time for you to do all of your journaling. And what else are they saying nowadays that you're supposed to be doing first thing in the morning?
Exercise? I don't
Think it's
know.
like journaling, exercising, doing those mindful exercises where you're basically singing Kumbaya for a couple minutes by yourself. I don't know. I don't do any of that. Ta-da! I'm a normal person. Actually, I am the farthest thing from normal. Please don't actually take that to heart. Time management helps with productivity, but doesn't account for where your energy is. So you could be saying that you'll have a meeting with somebody at 5 o'clock. You're so tired you can't keep your eyes open by 4:30 in the day. So now what are you going to do? Well, he should have been a different time of day than 5 o'clock. And second, I don't know, go get some caffeine if it affects you. It doesn't affect me, which is like so sad. I could drink an energy drink and go to bed. Not helpful. Energy management says that recognizes that not all hours are equally productive. So for me, any time before noon is usually less productive than any time after noon. Just because I am fighting being awake with every ounce of my being. I fight to fall asleep. And then, because I have to take meds to help me with that, I take a sleeping pill, which is literally the only way to knock me out. And so I end up the next morning coming out of ashen death. I sound like an Imagine Dragon song. That beginning noise that he makes at that song. Yeah. It's completely me first thing in the morning. I'm like, oh, I'm awake. Okay, now what do I gotta do? I do usually hit the ground running, but it's very unenthusiastically. And if I woke up because somebody called me, there is hell to pay. Why are you doing this to me? You should know me if you have my phone number not to call this early. Time management, if done wrong, can lead to burnout if overscheduled without considering where your energy is. So if you're scheduling yourself, if you look at my schedule right now, it's a try to burn me out. It's really trying to. I put out a post on Facebook, and I put up a post in an, or I had somebody feature me in their newsletter to get guests here on my podcast. And I have two podcasts scheduled today. So after this one, I have to go record another one. And that's been happening for the last couple weeks. I am enthusiastic and grateful for the responses that I got from both, but I am looking forward to getting through all of it and probably being done with my podcast for the year at some point. Time management relies on calendars, to-do lists, and deadlines to maximize efficiency, which to-do lists only count if you use them. I am of the mind that I write what I need to do on a piece of paper. Okay. Electronically. Ever Remarkable. I put all my stuff on my Remarkable. But I don't have like a list that says this is what I have to do, because I won't necessarily pay attention to that. I write it down so I'll remember. And then once it's in my head, I can go ahead and get everything done. Energy management encourages breaks, movement, and self-care to promote peak performance. If you are encouraging yourself to take breaks, so me, I have time baked into all my appointments so that after I'm done with the appointment, I can get up and just get up for a minute. Because if I stay seated all day with all my autoimmunes, I will not be a happy camper by the time to go to bed. Because I will be as stiff as a board and just about as energized as one. So I usually take 2 to 5 minutes to just kind of walk, even if I stay in my room, because I know my next appointment is in 2 minutes. Just move around for a second, otherwise my knees start aching and my hips and my back, it just all goes to heck in a handbasket. It says time management often promotes multitasking, which can reduce focus and effectiveness. I disagree with that. I can multitask. I don't usually do more than 2 things at a time, but like I'll answer a phone while still doing something on the computer or stuff like that, because if I don't, then I'm not going to have any time for anything. There's just stuff has to get done. So I am of the mind that you're supposed to use both time management and energy management at the same time. So you don't want to strictly do it by time management, because then you're going to fill your calendar up and not have any wiggle room to be able to do anything but what's happening on your calendar. But at the same time, you have to recognize that there's going to be a schedule. You can't just get rid of the schedule altogether. Your schedule is what keeps you doing the things that need to be done. They need to be done. You have to do them. This is the time you've laid out. But the key is to schedule when you're best at doing things. Maybe you schedule those boring business meetings first thing in the morning because you don't need to be anything but half dead, because you have a way to take notes for you, right? Record the meeting, shove it into the thing that says meeting notes or whatever. I don't know, different people do it different ways. You do that in the morning when you have barely any energy, and then towards the middle and end of the day, you actually do the work. when you know you're going to be the most focused and you have the most energy and you're ready to go and do. That works best for me. On days where your calendar seems to be filling up quickly, if you use an outside calendar. So I use TidyCal now to schedule appointments. Obviously, that's how you got here. And so people can schedule with me. I finally figured out that I can tell it how many of a certain appointment I want per day. So last week, I had a bunch of 10, 15 minutes in a day, which is very not productive days because they were spaced out enough that I just couldn't get anything done. You just get started on something and then you were back in another 15-minute meeting. And then you get started on it again and oops, got to go into a meeting. But I was able to cut it down so that I have 5 of those a day. And then I figured out that doing 3 podcasts in a day was way too exhausting. So I switched it and now I do 2 a day. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And so that way I can have room around. And my podcast recordings, which are scheduled Thursday, Friday, Saturday, are scheduled later in the day. They're not, nobody is getting a hold of me at 9 a.m. to do a podcast because my sinus cavity would have a field day with that. I'd sound like a dude half the time and I'm not into it. So I know for myself that for podcasting, I have to go later in the day so that I actually semi-sound female. I don't know exactly how female I sound. I hate my voice, actually, so there's a problem when I'm editing.
That's always a struggle, right? It's always something I think we all have to work through is the sound of our own voice.
Yeah.
Before cell phones and people would call the landline, I would raise my voice so that people wouldn't think I was my husband. Hello? The funny thing is, oh, I'm a soprano.
Yeah, I used to be, and then I started smoking. Don't do that, kids. It lowered my voice. You don't only want to schedule things in your energy spots, because for one, that sounds way too woo-woo for me. And like, oh, I'm feeling the energy of Sagittarius today, so I can't take any of these meetings. I don't know what the crap that means, but yeah, that's probably a crap excuse. Just saying. Astrology is a thing, I guess, but I don't actually think that it means anything. Because then, what, a million people are all going to have a bad day on Tuesday because Aries is in retrograde? Like, what the crap does that mean? That means you're not special. And everybody is special in their own special way. We're all special snowflakes. But we're all different, right? We have experiences that are similar. Like I have experiences that sound similar to what you've gone through. No, we're not going to start getting into it because if we start doing that, that's a whole different kind of podcast right there. That's a whole different kind of meeting right there. But we are unique in how we dealt with it, how we got out of it, when we got out of it, that kind of situation. So while you may be doing the same thing somebody else has already done, you are still doing it uniquely because it's yours. That does not mean that you're going to get anything for free just because you did such a thing. It just means that you are unique because of the things and experiences and stuff that you have. Your energy, in my case, all I mean by energy here is, you know, when do you get tired during the day? When are you most energized? When do you feel that your attitude has calmed down from actually waking up? Because I can tell you, I've answered the phone at 9 o'clock in the morning sometimes going, what do you want? Because it is way too early to be talking to anybody at that time. And I am not. It's got to be like noon before you talk to me. But at the same time, so we don't want it to always be time management. We don't always want it to be energy management, because that's when you get into the habit of saying, Oh, I can't do this today. My energy is off. I'm going to go buy a t-shirt. No, you still have to work. You probably have to bring money in because you're probably not rich. I say probably because I don't know who's listening at this point. And it could be something different. But make sure that you're matching when you're the most energized to your schedule as best as possible. Like, some of us don't get any choice. They have to go into a job or a career, but it's still working for somebody else. So you don't have much choice as to when things get scheduled. You work your schedule as much as possible to fit when you feel you're at the most energized, and then be willing to compromise because you may not be right after all these years. Know that I'm 100% correct in saying I'm not a morning person. 10 a.m. should be like the earliest people can talk to you. Maybe 11. 11 sounds good. Take as far out of the a.m. as possible. But at the same time, if you're working for somebody else and you're not setting your own hours or whatever, like I am, then still pay attention to when your energy is and try to put, like, I'm meeting a client at 3:30 today. That's when I'm the most energized and I will have a great meeting with that person. Instead of saying, oh no, they scheduled him at 6:30 p.m. I'm going to be dragging my feet to this meeting because I'm not going to have energy left. So work within what you have.
Yeah, and if someone else is scheduling your day for you, like you're employed and you don't have a choice in when you do things, there's always things that you can do. Say, okay, well, I know I have this meeting later in the day and I'm not going to have energy for it or whatever. So I'm going to take a 5-minute break and I'm going to do something that energizes me. Listen to some energetic music or just close your eyes and take some deep breaths or whatever that is for you, right? So recognizing what your energy is or how it flows is still helpful, even if you can't schedule around it. Just helps you to manage it a little bit better. Regarding energy, there's something interesting. I totally 100% believe that you're not a morning person, but I know for me personally, I thought I wasn't a morning person and I was always up late. And then all of a sudden I realized I can get up early and be all by myself and drink my coffee and do my work. And that's when I have the most mental clarity. And so that's when I do the most mentally intense work, is in the mornings before the kids get up. I think the hardest part for me wasn't the morning. It was the transition to everybody being around and me needing to parent and teach and all that stuff, right? So yeah, I found that interesting. And then in the afternoon, I have so many tabs open in my brain, I can't concentrate on doing anything else. So I just tend to do the mindless, I have to print this and I have to do this, and try and close some of those tabs that are open, because I've tried exercising and having my quiet time and my prayers or whatever, and after lunch doesn't happen. My brain doesn't work that way. And then in the evenings, that's when I'm physically energetic, and I figured out why that is and how that works, and then figured out what helps me to go to sleep. So yeah, what you said about the planning versus the energy and how they work together is so important. And I think a lot of people might miss that. And I know I missed that. I just tried to push through my day and beat myself up for not succeeding at all these things. But having the freedom to recognize our individuality and work with that instead of against, that's how we're going to shine the most and produce the most work and be successful at whatever we're trying to do. 100%. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. I was scheduling appointments at 8 a.m. and because heavy sleeping pills I'm on, I was missing appointments because I absolutely could not wake up in time. So it's gotten to the point where if somebody's like, oh, can I meet with you at like 8 a.m. because I have to do this thing and the rest of my day is booked out, I have to stay up the night before I will do it on a rare occasion because it's whatever. But literally all I have to do to stay awake all night is not take the sleeping pill.
Wow.
So it does end up happening because I have something happening first thing in the morning, or I'm too worried about something and I just, my body will not let me take that pill. But I try to keep that very few and far between because I know I have to sleep. I have gone, so before I started being medicated into sleep, I would be awake anywhere between 48 hours and, well, anywhere between 2 days and 5 days. And if I was up for 2 days, I would sleep the normal 8 hours and be fine. And if I was up for 5 days, then 5 or 6 actually, then I would sleep for like an entire day and night. And that caused a lot of problems. It meant that there were things happening inside my home that I didn't know about. And when all of that came to head, of course, nobody believed that I was sleeping 24 hours at a stretch. But sleep for me is one of those things where my body has never agreed to do it. It gets forced to do it. Mm-hmm. Either after being up for so long or after the pill makes it. Mm-hmm. So my body and sleep are not friends.
That's got to be tough. Yeah, that's intense. One more thing about the energy is I know for myself, I've learned. The other thing too is social energy. Well, there's introverts and extroverts and ambiverts, and there's also the type of interactions that you have with people. And I've learned I have to be careful about the next day. I learned this lesson. There's a couple stories I'll share, one of them quick, but I went to a networking event and I was in town all day shopping because I live out of the city. So drive into the city, you get everything done at once. And then I went to this event in the evening and I was on and I was smiling and I was engaging. I was listening and I was like, oh, that went well. The next day I could not function. I was fully disabled. Like I literally, I just lay outside on the deck and fell asleep. And my son came home from work. He's like, what are you doing? I said, I can't function. He's like, why don't you get the other kids to help? I said, I can't. I don't know how. I'm disabled. Like I can't do it. So he got them. I didn't know what to make for supper. I couldn't even figure that out. So he got the kids to help clean up enough that my mind was clear enough. I'm like, I can make rice and beans and then they will be fed. I mean, it's basic, but that will be food. And I learned to guard my energy, how much I do. And if I do have something that, well, being authentic, I found, I think masking is what's really, really draining, and being with people who drain my energy. So if I feel like I'm going to be in an environment that's very draining on a social level, the next day I can't do like a podcast recording or have intense meetings or expect a lot of myself. I just have to be able to kind of function and get through the day and make sure everyone's fed and clean and whatever else. Right. So that's another thing too, is just being aware of our, whether we're extroverts or ambiverts or introverts, and how much we can handle, what type of interactions, and kind of spacing that out and honoring that about ourselves and working with that to preserve our energy.
It's probably the fastest way to make me go to sleep is to put me in a room full of a bunch of people that I have to network with. Because my energy stores are going to go away very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm the type of person that's like, hi, let's talk politics. If we talk about the weather, I just, oh, this is tiring.
We're talking about the weather. I expect them in a crowd of 60 or 70 year olds because that's who talks about that. I watched the Weather Channel today. Why? Why? When there are so much more interesting things to watch, did you decide that the Weather Channel was the most greatest thing on the planet to watch? I don't understand.
I'm in a farming community, so weather is fairly important. I've enjoyed talking to you. Enjoyed your perspective.
Thank you very much for coming. I appreciated it. I think we had a wonderful talk.